Hello, guys, and welcome back to TLM Nation. I am super excited to have someone here, which we've known each other for a very long time, and we are going to dive into a lot of probably touchy subjects for most people, but this is something that really comes up a lot, I know, in my world and in your world, too, about being informed on what the world is dealing with vaccines, with industries that are around that, and also solutions and ways to get involved. So I want to introduce you guys to Irene Pai, and I will let her fill you in a little bit on what she does.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me. This is exciting. She's been inviting me to come on for the last year and a half or so. So I became an advocate for informed consent and educating our legislators. When in 2015, I was exposed to Representative Bill Posey speaking on the House floor about the CDC whistleblower. And it wasn't something that I was looking for. It was just something that I came across. And somehow watching this representative on the House floor imploring his peers to look into these documents. And if you don't know what the CDC whistleblower documents were about, Dr. William Thompson, who continues to be the CDC, is a chief scientist. And he gave 10,000 pages worth of documents that the rest of his peers were under the impression had been destroyed about autism and vaccines, specifically that, in fact, there is a correlation, and the correlation in his research was magnified to 336% in African-American boys who received the second dose within, I think it's 18 months or 15 months.
Wow.
So here was this exposure to this corruption. And I learned that in that 5 minutes that Representative Posey was speaking, it's pretty much an empty hall. It's called the morning hour. Mm-hmm. And so anybody who wants to put it in record gets 5 minutes to put something on the docket.
Okay.
And because when I learned this, that this room is empty, I thought, well, we need to get this information to all the other legislators.
Right.
So I started a Facebook group, Educate Our Legislators Show Up Day. And the premise for that was to designate one day where all across the United States, participants would go to their representatives, their congressperson's
right.
office, and present the same information.
Okay.
And from that, we started to see kind of an influx of pro-vaccine narrative,
yep.
which didn't exist before.
Right.
And I came to find out that, so this was 2015, 2016, that in 2010, from the Rockefeller Institute, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, along with Fauci, names we're all familiar with now,
yeah.
Decided that it was going to be the decade of the vaccine.
And wow.
You can go onto the Gates Foundation press release and find this press release where they're indicating the need to make this, the decade.
The push.
Where,
yeah.
And so then that's where, we got the measles scare from Disney and the measles was the big thing that was happening. And mm-hmm. in my opinion, that was just the priming that was needed for society
right.
to have the buy-in for the bigger thing that was to
well,
come,
problem,
which,
reaction, solution.
Yeah.
And the thing about it too, Irene, is that you can, if you take a step back, I think everything is out there for you to see.
Oh, absolutely.
You just don't either have the eyes to see, but yet, or you don't really take the time.
I have an experience with that. I was in a place where there was so much upheaval happening in my life personally with, just circumstances and events. And I would drive my kids to school the same route day in, mm-hmm. pick them up, drop them off the same street I'd go down. And one day I see this mailbox that's painted like a big cow. And I thought, I've not seen that before. And it was a reminder that sometimes things are so obvious and right in front of you.
Yes.
But because we've got our, our
blinders on,
and I don't even see them as blinders. There's just, we're just navigating the path that
yeah.
we're on. And these things are intrusions. They don't really belong there to us.
Right.
We don't have any familiarity with it because we're not associated to it. But then one day you look a little bit off that focus point that you've had. And it just opens up, you know.
Something that actually affects you personally.
That's usually the big one. Yeah, that's the whammy. That's the smack
one
in the face.
See more than anything is that people, they just continue on their autopilot life. And then when something happens, all of a sudden, now the world is open. Even though people were always trying to give information and to actually pull the veil back, until it affects you personally, very rarely will people dive into anything other than just the surface.
Yeah. So back to the, you know, the kind of historical path that got me here.
Yeah.
Simultaneously to what was going on with this Bill Posey, you know, presentation, SB 277 was happening in California.
Okay.
And so the reason that was, you know, stunning to me was because my oldest and my grandkids were living in California, mm-hmm. and my first grandchild was vaccine injured. She nearly died from her one and only vaccine, and we need to chopper her to Phoenix Children and PICC line to the heart, and this whole, you know, very drastic and horrible experience when you've got, you know, this little 7-month, they decided to do delayed selective, but it is playing vaccine roulette, you know, there's never an indication of which one's going to do it or not. And so I watched what was happening during those hearings, which are all, you know, televised or recorded publicly. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, I cannot let this happen in Arizona.
Yeah.
So I started looking for groups that may be doing something proactively, and I couldn't find anything. So I took it upon myself to start knocking on doors kind of thing, and, you know, speaking to legislators that would welcome me or not, and speaking the Chiropractic Association, the Naturopathic Association. I'm not afraid to reach out and just have sensible conversations.
Were they welcoming?
Some were, some were. Some were kind of stunned at what I was presenting them. And, you know, kind of like, that can't be. Well, it is.
Exactly.
I can give you more information if you like. Yep. And from that, you know, it grew. And then that continued on. In 2019, I was offered the position of state director for the National Vaccine Information and NVIC. And so I decided to take on that role and started drafting legislation. And since then, I've been just, I'm claimed to be politically involved, but I don't see it that way because I'm not running for anything.
Right.
You know, I'm just speaking to people who would be the decision makers, regardless of what arena that is.
Well, I think the powers that be politicized it. I don't think it's the same thing.
Right.
I mean, it's just, I mean, I really don't. I think it was politicized, but I don't think it is a political conversation.
It's not a political conversation. And unfortunately, though, because there are laws that have been put in place for some time that require you to participate with this paradigm and this decision-making through a legal function, it even, you know, kind of confines it that much more to it being a legal or a lawful conversation. And I'm speaking specifically as it pertains to the exemptions.
Right.
So
what do people need to know about that? Because I know I get so many conversations with college kids, high school kids. I had one just a week ago who, and the thing is that there's still, to me, there's a disconnect, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. There's a disconnect within the medical industry that is the front line dealing with people. So it's always like, you have to get this, you have to get that, the coercion, the pressure, you know, and this young girl was 17, and I've had kids that are 18, 22, whatever, and they're always pushed and coerced into, you can't do this unless you have this. There's never a fully formed consent. There's never a conversation about, well, you know what, here's what happened, you know, this, it's always just a very black and white conversation. And they're bullied so many times. And then if the mom or the dad are not equally educated or at least aware, it creates such conflict to where a medical, to me, a medical profession, part of their job is to look at the situation and make sure that all parties know what's going on. And when someone reaches 18, yes, they can take on their medical, you know, their all their own medical freedoms at that point. But what do you think that people... what are they missing in that conversation?
I think ultimately what I have witnessed through the years is that there has been a kind of co-opting of who's valued more in their expertise. And that's something that has gone through the decades. You know, when I was a kid growing up, somebody who was going to be a doctor was just, you know,
the epitome of,
you know, the brainiac. Only certain people get to get that far in their education. And we started to have this kind of sweeping narrative into, you know, these being the experts and the professionals.
Right.
And kind of deterring there being any conversation because you ought to follow the recommendations, you know, check with your doctor.
Right.
And I'm not just, you know, I don't want to invalidate the expertise and the knowledge that is there. But to the point of your question, it shifted from it being a conversation that is guided by the love and the consideration and the wisdom that a parent brings into their relationship with their child to you don't know anything, these are the experts kind of attitude about it. And in addition to that, I think, I mean, I when I do presentations, sometimes I have this study that was done, and he calls it the vortex, the pharma. I'll get it as we're talking, but there's this kind of the media is been kind of
weaponized,
and then the education systems were, you know, physicians, and then the studies that are put out have conflict of interest. So there's this strong arming that's taking place on the topic,
right.
Right. And so when somebody comes, you know, when you come and say, well, what about this part of it? Well, that's, I mean, who do you think you are? Where did you get your education?
Who are you to question
They're
this?
Dismissing it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I feel that there's a giant wedge that's been put into the family as a whole.
Agree.
In so many of the conversations that maybe in the past were difficult to have and awkward and uncomfortable, but they were had anyway.
Right, right.
And they were considered. Now it's just an absolute kind of rejection of the values that a parent would bring into it.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's a parent-child relationship or a partnership, you know, sometimes it's couples that are not in agreement to what should take place. I think what is the most graceful thing to do is to be in consideration that this is someone you love and this is someone you care about. And so how can I most reasonably engage you to take the time to listen?
Right.
And so, you know, kind of a coaching thing, right?
Yeah.
It's like set the invitation.
Right.
And say, you know, this is so important to me, and I know it will be important to you, and your consideration of what I would want to present to you is what I'm looking for. And if it takes an hour for us to do this, I would just want no judgment.
Right.
And just create an environment where that could be done. I don't abide by the you're 18 and now you can do whatever you want because your brain isn't fully developed till you're 25.
No.
Right.
No.
And so I just putting them out there, you know, yes, you're allowed
you're
to
adult.
Vote.
Yeah.
But you still can't even buy a glass of wine if you wanted it.
No,
you know?
No.
So these incremental growths that are I think kids at 18 still need some guidance.
Absolutely.
And I feel like there's a lot of, you know, focused attention on getting them to be the new customers.
Yes.
Because now they're free and independent and you don't have to do what mom and dad said.
Right.
But
there's also the other side, too, though, Irene. There are a lot of kids that I see that are advocating for their own health and advocating to educate themselves and to figure these things out. And they're pushing back against, I mean, a doctor who we know is, you know, that's a big pharma recipient.
Right.
And a parent who just refuses to look back there. So there's both sides of that to
Absolutely.
Where, and I see that a lot with the kids who are like, well, hey, I've done this research. I've read this. I've looked at this. I don't want this, you know? And that's where I think that when they are 18, that to me is a plus because they can then go, I'm actually questioning what you're telling me to do, which isn't that what we're supposed to do?
Yeah.
You know, versus the other part of the conversation.
Yeah.
To where it's like, no, this is what, and I like when you said whose information is more valuable than others. And then you look back at the, what's the driver behind it? Or I always say that, like, what's driving which person?
Right.
You know, the one person is, yeah, it's like, this is all about my health and my well-being. I'm open to listen. This is about my financial, you know, this is where the medical part comes from.
Right.
And then the parents are sitting there going, well, I'm actually losing control of a conversation. You know, so what do you see has shifted, like, from, I mean, because we both have had experiences with vaccine injury with our kids and that. And so what do you see, like, ever since the shot immunizations? I know you've sent me some information on, like, the amount of what's coming after our kids and things like that. Where did you see that just shifted that? I know you said, like, that Gates and those guys said that this is going to be the...
Yeah, well, the decade of the vaccine, I think it was 2011 or, you know, 2010, 2011, sometime in there. But, I mean, I have a child that was born in the 80s and then twins that were born in the early 2000s. So I have this, you know,
big gap.
And my eldest was raised in San Francisco, and she was asthmatic, you know, as a condition that was part of a hereditary. I was asthmatic as a kid. My dad was asthmatic. And so she went to a pediatrician, you know, often, and never did I ever, ever have a conversation about vaccines. It just wasn't, it wasn't part of any of the exchanges that we had in the course of, you know, 7 or 8 years that we were going there when she was little. And so I think, you know, there's been a real sort of driven effort to grow this product line, especially post the act that enabled them to be free of liability.
Yes.
Right. So if you
Which was 1986, right?
Vaccine 86 is when it gets put in place. So if you look, and, you know, again, I have these things that I've taken off CDC website, which are now completely, you know, removed. You can't find it anywhere. You can't even find it in the Wayback Machine.
Right.
But they had a chart that it, at the time that I accessed it is 2016.
Okay.
So it starts from in the 1960s. The only vaccines at the time was the DTP, the polio, and then soon after the MMR gets introduced.
Right.
So it was these three shots for seven antigens, and you know, the percentage of coverage at that time was like in the 50s, so like 52%, 63%, and we lived that way.
Yeah.
And nobody was afraid of these things, and there wasn't any kind of conditioning, you know. And then you see it kind of grow, like when it ends in 1986, it's at that kind of value.
Right.
And then there's a five-year gap. And then it starts going year by year incrementally more and more until it's like it needs to be 95% of the people.
Yeah.
And it's not the people. I should make a correction. The expectation is 95% of the children.
Right.
Those are the ones that are burdened with carrying this immunity, community immunity concept to the rest of the population.
Which is insane to me.
Yeah. And so then you see, so there was those three shots with the seven antigens, another nine vaccines added. And then, you know, so now it's a total of 16 antigens and a total of, you know, 12 different shots.
Right.
Likewise, when you look at, when you compare, you know, children born in the 60s and the 80s and in now the early 2000s and even, you know, maybe 2004, 2005, the total number of shots would have been 11 for those born in the 60s from 2 months to age 15.
Right.
And then 24 for, you know, those born in the 80s from 2 months to age 16.
Okay.
Now, if you look at the schedule and you count, and I'm talking doses.
Right.
So not injections because
doses.
They've gotten clever that, you know, you could put three in one. And so,
exactly.
So the dose is the antigen. So measles, mumps, rubella are three different infections that you're getting bombarded into your system simultaneously.
Right.
So... And in comparison to those time frames that I'm talking about, a mother would never have received a vaccine.
Mm-mm.
So now it common protocol is a DTaP or TDAP is the booster terminology. And a flu shot for every pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
And now we know their COVID is being put into every pregnancy.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter if you have, you know, a 1 year span or a 7 year span or whatever. It's every pregnancy.
Right.
So if we were just to count the Tdap and the flu, that's four doses that are being received in utero.
Mm-hmm.
And from birth, the hepatitis B vaccine, which is, you know, it's protocol within the first 12 hours of birth, but most commonly given within 4 to 6 hours. For those that may not know, hepatitis B is exclusively transmitted through contaminated sexual activity with somebody who's got an infection or contaminated IV drug use.
Right.
And even when you read the documentation for the hepatitis B vaccine, at most, if you believe that it has an efficacy to protect you against this infection of 10 years, so we're giving it to newborns.
Brand new.
For an infection that can only be transmitted through those two methods, for a lifespan that only has 10 years, for what purpose?
Exactly.
Right? So from birth to 6 months, a child is receiving more than 24 doses,
mm-hmm.
which... And a child born in the 80s and you know, would have been 15 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And most childhood vaccines are administered by age 5. It's 56 doses by age 5.
56 doses by age 5.
And most of those are administered in the first year.
Yeah.
So it's 36 in the first year.
It's a bombardment.
This is not counting COVID.
Right, which they're working really hard to get that on the childhood schedule.
It is on the schedule, yeah. Okay. It just hasn't, so... The way that it works is, interestingly enough, once it gets put in the schedule, it is automatically free of liability. So any drug, any vaccine that gets released to market, they like the HPV vaccine was, you know, studied in 20-something year olds.
No, that's the Gardasil, right?
That's Gardasil. Okay. And so they kept lowering the age of who the population they were going to inject more and more until it gets put on the childhood schedule.
Right.
Then it's free of liability again. So
let me ask you this. So does that mean, so when it's free of liability, when it's actually put into the schedule, which we know that was the push, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and that was kind of the back end thought, I think, of the 1986 Act.
Totally.
So if that's the case, then when all this stuff happens with other like over-the-counter prescription drugs, because they're not something, so they're still liable for all that.
And they've paid billions of dollars in criminal fines.
Right.
Well, that's like I used the analogy one time. It's like imagine they have a department store, right? And you've got the shoe department and the accessories department, the makeup and the men's clothing and the women's clothing. And all of these departments have shown a tremendous amount of corruption. They've had to pay criminal fines. But the merchandise that's sold on, you know, in the perfume section... That one is clear of any wrongdoing. They never, ever do any wrong. Every single department around it has been, you know, fined criminally for just a gamut of different, you know, infractions. But this one, you know, minute section that so happens to be free of liability.
Right.
Functions criminal free.
Yeah.
Like, you know, without any marring of any, come on, it doesn't make sense.
No.
The Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, which is now more commonly heard of and, you know, people have kind of at least had a framing of what this is.
Right.
Is a program that has, you know, incredible limitations. And in addition to it, the pharmaceutical industry is not the one paying out these injuries. So every dose, so all of those doses... 3-in-1 shots, you know, it's 3 doses.
Right.
Every dose is levied a 75-cent tax. So all these doses that these kids are receiving is going, 75 cents of it is going into this
fun.
You know, this pot. And that's what they pay people with for the vaccine. So it's the taxpayer.
Yeah, we're still doing it.
we're part of it.
It's fantastic,
like, I don't want to participate. So that's another, you know, if you don't want to say no because of any other part, just I don't want to participate with paying for your criminal fees.
Exactly.
And so the VICP also, another part of it that's just unbelievable, has a table injury graph Okay. And so in order for you to make a claim, it has to happen within a certain amount of time. So it's 3 years for an injury from when you first have the injury diagnosed or, you know, presents itself. And you also have to have the injury has to have existed for 6 months before you can make a claim. Because they're hoping it just vanishes, right? You get
away.
Semi-paralyzed and you get Bell's palsy.
Goes away.
And it goes away in 5 months and, you know, and then it comes back 9 months when you get another, you have to start that over again. So your 6 month count doesn't go back to when you first had that injury. And a lot of parents don't recognize it right away. I mean, I had my own vaccine injury story, and I didn't connect the dots to it till the second time it happened.
Mm.
I was vaccinated not as a kid, but as a flight attendant. Flight attendants are back. I was going to start working for Pan Am back in the day.
Okay.
And I was going to be flying internationally, and in order to do that, you get vaccinated like in the military.
Right, right.
And so you just line up, and they poke you. And
yeah.
I developed really bad, you know, ear infections and allergies, and my asthma got just so much more aggravated, and I had been clear of it for several years.
Okay.
And so I associated all of that symptomology to flying.
Makes sense.
I was in a cabin. I'm changing climates. I'm exposed to all kinds of things, even though I was hardy and, you know, robust.
Yeah, your
so far
immune
as
system,
my
everything, yeah.
And then I cleared it. I'm a big fan of food as medicine, right?
Right.
So I lived very healthfully, and I was fit. I was traveling all over the world, but having none of these conditions or issues. And we decided to go to India, and we were going to be there for 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay.
And in order to be there for that duration, you needed to have some shots for your visa.
Okay.
And instead of me going to the airline and saying, hey, can I have my documents to see, I just went back to the doctor and said, hey, I need these shots because I didn't think anything of it.
Okay.
And acutely, I started having these respiratory issues. I'm like, huh, I must be allergic to something in the vaccines. I didn't even think the vaccines were bad.
Were the problem.
Or, you know, creating, it was me. I was allergic to something in it, you know, so I was not going to be a good recipient for this in the future, and therefore neither would my kids be.
Right.
So, you know, that kind of recognition takes someone who is willing to pay attention.
Yes.
And unfortunately, because we have swayed our trust to the experts, when someone does have, when I went to the doctor, they were like, yeah, you probably shouldn't do it again. And I was, you know, end of story.
Right, right.
Nobody gaslit me. I mean, I hear so many stories. Of,
oh,
you know,
it's horrible.
The doctors, you know, saying, well, that can't be. Vaccines don't do that. I mean,
right.
Just a little bad reaction. I mean.
That's my favorite, a little bad reaction.
Well, I mean, I've got a storyline of, you know, a kid having seizures on, you know, and the mom taking her to a new doctor, and the new doctor said, that's because they gave four shots at once. She should never get more than three shots at once.
Yeah.
Three shots could still be seven antigens.
Exactly.
Kid has seizures again. The doc's like, well, you know, that's
you
just
two.
That's something going on with your daughter. It's not the shot.
Isn't that interesting? Rather than looking at the actual interruption of what you're putting into their system, it's the kid that's the problem. That's my favorite.
Conversation. It's the person. It's the recipient is the one that's got the issue. The product is perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And it's just, you know, it goes back to that kind of manipulation of thought.
They've done a really good job of that with people, though, I think. It's multiple generations.
Oh, yeah. That's
why
I said decades long.
Yeah. They've done a great job of that.
Have you ever heard of Edward Bernays?
Yes.
Yeah. So when I first, you know, got exposed to his his concept of propaganda, which was just to sell products, really.
Right.
Right. So tell somebody a story and have them buy into the story and then they'll want the product.
It's an emotional buy-in.
That's exactly what's going on with this particular framing. So,
yeah.
You know, vaccines save lives, save millions of lives, is a talking point that just gets reiterated so frequently that people repeat it and they don't even know that what they're repeating.
It's buried in our culture. I mean, you even like with the whole COVID stuff, it was like if you want to go see someone, then this is what you have to do. And if you don't, then you don't care about them. So it's like we're psychologically affecting these people. Yeah. I mean, at every single level. So what do you think about, like, the conversation? Where do you see at all, or if it's even a possible thing, to have a conversation about people that were waking up more and more to it? Do you agree or disagree?
I definitely agree that one of the blessings in disguise, I don't know the proper way to acknowledge the positive outcome of this whole COVID fiasco that we've been through, is that even if the people that initially weren't, you know, willing to resist or reject what was being presented to them, there is now a tremendous amount of genuine
skepticism
that you can't go back.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I don't think that we're at the point yet where we're getting the critical mass that's necessary to really offset, you know, the next push. You know, the mask wearing, there's so much evidence that indicates that this is not going to, you know, inhibit your, because it's, you know, there's so many parts of it.
Right, right.
And yet you see people walking around with masks and, you know, you go into employees wearing masks and all kinds of things. So I do think that there are more people willing to ask the questions.
I see that too.
And be receptive to listen to the answers to those questions, that not rejected, you know, immediately when it doesn't kind of fit the mold that they're most attuned to.
Right. But I also think too, I think that people are realizing that when you look at historically, and I know not everybody will do that, but you look at historically the health of a generation, you know, even just from the appearance standpoint, without even looking at statistical, I mean, the autoimmunes that people have right now, perfectly healthy kids dealing with all these things. There has to be something at some point in time where there is a tipping scale to where you're like, okay, where are we? It's like the peanut allergy, right? It's like,
maybe.
Where is it coming from? You know,
there's a part of me that feels like we have become very kind of asleep to the new norm.
I
walk around the grocery store. I mean, I grew up, you know, in places. I lived in Florida for a time.
Yeah.
And so everybody was fit, and not because they went to the gym. You know, it wasn't that kind of fitness. It was just, you know.
It was basically a different level of living, to where our food wasn't poison. This wasn't poison. I mean, environmental toxins, all this kind of stuff that their bodies are dealing with.
And I mean, it's just the status quo, right? So it's just accepted that, you know, I'm 60, that at 60 years old, I'm supposed to be taking medications.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand.
I know,
what
I know.
Does that,
well, they've
you don't take
it.
Anything? No, I don't.
No.
I mean, I take vitamin C, I take charcoal.
I take
know,
some stuff, but not
Uganda,
that.
But
yeah.
So, and I'm an anomaly.
Yeah.
The great majority of Americans, anyway. I mean, we went to Budapest a couple of years ago with my, you know, my kids, and they were like, "Oh my gosh, Mom! I just realized in the grocery store it's a complete different representation of health.
Different concept."
My
favorite is when somebody, you walk into a big store and they say, "This is the health department. This is the health section." And I'm like, "So what's all this?
what's
everything else?
It?
What's the rest of it?" And there was a girl that posted it. It was so good. She was from, I think of the country, but she was posting like the candies and stuff like that we ship to their country.
Mm-hmm.
Every candy has a warning label on it.
Yeah.
That it's slapped over the ingredients. That it's basically like, and she actually talks about, just for you in America, so you know, when your stuff comes over here, it's labeled as dangerous and toxic and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we've become so immune to it, I think, because I also think that it keeps everyone complacent and you have to accept this and accept that. And it's really interesting when you have the American mindset, because I don't look at that as that should be the American mindset. We are supposed to be supposedly setting the standards and thinking about the rest of the world. And I think we have just literally done that. We've done it to ourselves.
Yeah. We're very polluted.
Yeah.
And, and you know, I mean, I have had a healthy skepticism since I was a kid. You know, I was the kid that was the teacher would be like, every time I raise my hand, like, are you kidding
it's
me?
It's you
like,
again.
And, yeah. It's like, well, I can I, you know, because I just don't get it. Like, how can you say this? It doesn't make sense.
Same exact.
And, you
I
know,
was
the same. Some teachers loved it. You know, they
inquisitive mind is good, right. Irene.
They'd be like, you know, let me sit. I had one teacher that sat me right next to his desk so he can keep an eye on me.
Yeah, same.
And but in a appreciative way. It wasn't like I was a troublemaker or whatnot.
Yeah.
And so he'd let me explain things. I'd already traveled the world so much anyway. And so there's this questioning that's missing,
yes.
Even though we're saying more people are asking the questions.
Yeah.
It's very kind of very detailed specifically to one thing, which mm-hmm. is the COVID.
Right.
The willingness to ask questions about, you
outside
know, what
of that.
You're just saying about the food ingredients or about the, you know, fluoride in the water and about, you know, all of the things that are being put in the air. Any of those other things.
Yeah.
There isn't a curiosity or a question about.
No.
And I remember when, you know, when the big thing was that fat was bad, so everything was non-fat.
Non-fat, but no sugar,
No, the sugar was not a problem.
Okay.
That's actually, the sugar industry is what actually put the culprit on the fat.
Oh, they did.
And that's how when you look at labels right now, I don't know if the sugars will only give you the gram quantity, mm-hmm. but it doesn't give you a percentage value.
Not anymore.
No, because they lobbied to have that removed. So they could put in 23 grams of sugar. When you look at the percentage value of that, it would be so phenomenal.
Well, the whole entire item.
So I had a roommate that would buy Entenmann's. Remember the Entenmann's?
Yeah.
Would buy Entenmann's coffee cake, non-fat. And it's like, but everything else in there,
it's
not
junk.
Real food.
Yeah.
That's not, I mean,
no.
Baking is a good thing. And I, you know, I indulge in sweets too.
Well, but I'm going to make it though.
But you see all the crumbles and stuff. It's like, it looks like plastic. It looks like the plastic food that you'd see at a restaurant that's trying to show you what you could get.
Exactly, the display item.
But it doesn't have fat. Okay, well, that doesn't make sense.
Well, and so much of that came too with, what was it, in the mid-70s where they brought out the RDA and all that kind of stuff, and then they suppressed all the other information. I can't remember who was there, who was in the offices at that time, but there's a great, I was watching this, it was like a four-hour lecture on this by this guy by the name of Professor Tim Noakes. And he talks about all this information that just about made it to the public.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was suppressed and shut down because it didn't. So they basically inverted. So instead of changing hypothesis and data, they changed the data to meet their hypothesis.
And that is exactly what happens mm-hmm. time and time again.
Right.
I mean, that... We don't really have, I have a regard for science, and, you know, I mm-hmm. thought I was going to be a nurse, and, you know, I was
right.
going into that when I was younger. I didn't have a lack of trust at that point, but in the time, you know, that has spanned through, there is so much compromise
mm-hmm.
that's done
yeah.
at a scientific level, and it comes down to just pushing products.
That's all it is.
And
it's
products
consumerism.
Over people. And it doesn't matter, you know, if and to be clear, I don't really have a thought that these are evil people doing bad things. I just think we've completely kind of ingrained ourselves mm-hmm. to have this approach to life as we know it, that being sick is something that can be cured by a pill. Being sick is something that can be managed by, you know, a shot, a surgery, or whatnot.
Right.
I mean, some people have so many surgeries to repair, like, the one knee.
Right,
it's like,
right.
If it didn't work the first six times, what? Now
it's
you're
going
to do
work.
It to the other one?
Yeah. See, I'm opposite from you. I do think there's evil people pushing the agenda.
No, there are evil people pushing the agenda.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's the evil people that are involved. Like,
I think they think they're doing good.
Yeah.
I really do. I think they think that they're helping. I think that they think they're in the industry for the right reasons.
And they're right. They're part of a company that wants
right.
to, you know, present these products to the world. And now where I have a challenge is when I find, and this is, you know, opinion, obviously, when I witness a kind of dismissiveness
mm-hmm.
about it,
yeah.
right? So I don't know if you've ever seen the video, and I can send it to you. You know what the ACIP meetings are?
No,
it's the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices.
Okay.
It's called ACIP. And it's a meeting that happens at the CDC. I think it happens biannually.
Okay.
And it is, you know, where they determine new vaccines being put on into the childhood schedule or accepted to the market or what age group and whatnot. And so in 2018, I mean, when you watch this, you think it's a Saturday Night Live skit.
Really?
You can't believe these are actual, like, you know, government higher-ups.
Yeah.
Because they're just goofy and, mm-hmm. you know, they're not at all seemingly professional in the environment that they're in. And the new hepatitis B vaccine that's being presented as being adopted and put into the market. And, you know, there's conversation being had about it, there being the signal of heart attacks and myocarditis.
Right.
And, you know, they have a minimal conversation about it. These two goofy ladies, okay, it's time to vote. And then it gets voted in unanimously, 100% of the people. And then after they voted in, they check, well, when will we have the statistics on these, you know, post-marketing.
It should be a Saturday Night Live skit.
Oh my gosh, it's just.
That's insane.
And so the attitude that you witness with these people, mm-hmm. sometimes it's almost dismissive.
Yeah.
Like there is
It's very dehumanizing, I think, at some point. I really do. And I just wonder how much of those people are actually buying into all this stuff. I'm just curious. At to what level? You know, I mean, I'm just really curious about it because I think it's like when I have college kids that come in and say, well, I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't do that. And I said, well, you need to get an exemption for this. We need to figure this out. We need to go down this route. And it's interesting because the people then, and I guess because it's like with you, I believe I have certain, you know, responsibilities, right? As a parent, as a coach, as whatever. It's like, so if somebody comes to me and this I think is the problem is that when you go back to science, okay, so let's say we're going to listen to science. So to me, it should be, well, you look at both sides of the aisle, right? And then you make a decision rather than heavily on one side and you don't matter. And it's like when these kids bring these things up or parents bring these things up and we have these conversations in here, it's so funny and you hit the nail on the head where there are certain people that are valued more than others in this conversation. And I mean, I can remember being in the room with McKenna at Phoenix Children's, and I remember they had like 6 interns, you know, and I was in there and I was asking questions, and what they wanted to do to my daughter was just insane because they didn't know, you know, what was going on with her. And I'm like, well, I can tell you the complete storyline, and I have it all documented and blah, blah, blah. I mean, her hair fell out when she was 3 and a half, her eyelashes, everything's gone. She's completely bald. I can have this conversation with you right now. And they're just like, you know, just hold on. They're still conversating, whatever. And then finally I looked at the doctor and I said, you know, I go, I don't mean any disrespect, but you have a PhD and I have an MOM. I said, and if you could just listen to what I have to say and validate my conversation, we could probably have a really good back and forth relationship.
Exchange, yeah.
And I would listen. I go, but at this point we're out, and we left. Mm-hmm. You know, and he supposedly
can't do that anymore.
No. And that's what's so crazy about it is it's like you're looking at this, you're looking at losing so much of that conversation about your own being your own advocate, and it's being taken over more and more and more by these corrupt, you know, whether it's a corporation or a political party or whatever it is, and it's like so where does the line draw?
Well, I think, you know, I just want to add to some of the storyline that you've just shared. In addition, hospitals used to have patient advocates.
Right.
They don't have those. There's no patient advocate within the hospital. If you want a patient advocate, you're going to have to pay out of pocket for it. It's, you know, a private business, mm-hmm. you know, usually an ex-nurse that knows how to, you know, work their way through the protocols and the systems and whatnot.
Red tape and stuff.
The hospitals now have in-house social workers, and the in-house social workers are there to ensure that the patient adheres to the policies of the hospital.
Yeah.
So that in and of itself is so disempowering.
Yeah.
Because you have patients in there, you're an informed, educated, committed, mm-hmm. involved parent, and sometimes the parent that shows up is just completely devastated, doesn't have the wherewithal to actually be in an exchange with someone, you know, who's challenging them and, you know, overworked, tired, you know.
They're just looking for help.
They're looking for help and they're trusting you.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, there's no There's no regard for the individual who may challenge that what you're presenting seems too radical or too extreme or too what. So there's nobody to come in and help facilitate a cohesive dialogue for that, which I think is an incredible disservice.
That's horrible.
To and I know that so many people experience, you know, all kinds of things during the COVID fiasco, and it's just atrocious.
It is.
But I think, you know, you work with kids, and ultimately having that population, most of the peers within that age group, you know, somewhere between 15 and 25, understand what it is at risk if they don't choose to self-advocate and kind of put up a guard as to what will or will not happen with their bodies. If that group doesn't stand up to what's coming, we don't stand a chance. No matter how much I'm fighting for it, no matter how much, you know, my age group and the, you know, generation that comes after me, it won't matter. And that's the age group that I think is most challenging to reach, even though you're witnessing some that are great advocates, but ultimately, you know, like my kids are standalone as well because they've been raised hearing all kinds of things. You know, it's like, follow your moral compass. You know, if it doesn't fit, then don't follow it. Just stand up for it.
But they've been able to really, they've been really good to infiltrate it through social media.
Well, that's just it.
I mean, the influence of all that kind of stuff. They've got, you know, all the powers that be pushing this and pushing that. And I think, and again, that's why I think it's by design. I really do. I think that you look at why is weed legalized for this whenever THC was, what, 2% way back in the day. Now it's like 20-something percent in there. So all these things, to me, it is a systemic attack on our young generation. And I think it's insidious, to be honest. I really do. I think that, and so that's where the advocacy comes in and the conversation comes in and knowing. So you mentioned before we got started about a medical freedom. So what is that with the medical liberty?
Oh, the Medical Liberty Pledge.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So the Medical Liberty Pledge is, you can go to medicallibertypledge.org.
Okay. And we'll put this in the show notes, you guys.
So I decided somewhere along the way that, you know, my target audience were legislators. And that target audience was simply because, you know, I saw what was happening in California and other states. I wanted to make sure that, you know, I did my part to provide resources. And I mean, the resources come from the FDA and the CDC and the manufacturers. You know, it's not, I'm not making up these things.
No.
It's like, did you look into this, right? Yeah. A package insert, and I'm going to just kind of go on a little tangent in here to give you an example of what I mean and come back to the Medical Liberty Pledge. The package inserts for all pharmaceutical products follow the same structure, right? So the point one is the same in all, point six is the same in all. And when I started looking into these package inserts, which was 2013, I came across section 13.1 and I was acquiring them because people were saying, you got to see the inserts, you got to see the inserts. You can go online. The FDA has every vaccine insert. I can give you the link for that as well.
Yeah.
Section 13.1 is where it divulges the information of the results when the product has been tested for carcinogenic, tumorigenic, mutagenesis, or impairment of fertility.
Okay.
There isn't a vaccine on the market that has a statement other than this, which is this product has not been evaluated for its carcinogenic, mutagenic, tumorigenic, or impairment of fertility.
Wow.
So we're injecting these products into our kids, you know, 56 times by the time they're 5 years old. Most cancers are diagnosed by age six. Most vaccines are administered by age five.
Right, right.
Those are things that make me go, okay, correlation doesn't equal causation. Well, I can't ignore it.
No.
You can't rule out this product as being a culprit to that if this product has not been evaluated for these components.
Exactly, which is common sense.
We think about fertility. I mean, the impairment of fertility right now is off the charts,
yes.
And it's both men and women.
Right.
So it's exposing things like that. So that's part of the education piece.
Good.
Here's the insert. This isn't, you know.
You're not. That's the
Joe
thing.
Schmo,
nobody's
healthy
making
guy,
it up,
making
right?
it up, right?
No, and that's my biggest thing with people is that I know you're busy. I know you got a lot on your plate. I totally get it. This is your health that you cannot take back.
Yeah.
Once this is done, you're done. There's no going back and changing this. I mean, I know that my daughter is still dealing with that at 23.
Yeah.
So it's like you can't go back and change this. So why wouldn't you?
Yeah. Get all the information. Yeah.
Get all the information. Educate yourself. There. I mean, tell me the downside to doing that.
So let me get to the medical liberty pledge. So my thought, or you know, in discussing this was, as an advocate, I have found my peers across the United States. I work with other people, moms just like me, that had no clue what they were doing, right, but knew they couldn't stay quiet and started going into offices and presenting information and whatnot. And they're all over the United States. Now we communicate, we tap into each other's resources.
That's awesome.
We have a community. And I thought, well, the legislators don't have that. And there are so many great legislators kind of sticking their, you know, reputations out and putting them on the line and advocating for this right to informed decision making and advocating for no COVID-19 vaccines in schools and all these kind of things. So we decided to come up with language for the pledge. So the pledge is for anybody who's in elected office. So it could be a sheriff, commissioner, secretary of state. Obviously, the group that I've brought in the most are school board members and legislators. It's across the country. It's open to candidates and currently seated officials.
Okay.
And they simply take a pledge. And I'm not going to say the pledge because I won't get the verbiage just right.
Yeah.
And I don't want to, you know.
No, we'll send them to the website.
Tangle it up. But yeah, mlpledge.org. Anybody who's, you know, potentially going to be voted in can use that. Like, look, I took this pledge.
That's so good.
And so there's a conviction. It's a unifying effort of really kind of invigorating this dedication to no mandated medicine ever.
Yeah.
Right? The product can exist.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Totally. If you can have your decision if you want it, but so do we.
Don't
we
mandate don't it. Don't, you know, coerce people into feeling that if they don't, you know, they're going to be condemned in one way or another, losing their jobs, losing their, you know,
livelihood, everything.
And so the pledge came from that vision of having a sense of, you know, empowered voices within our, and for people to know who they'd vote for.
Right, right.
And who they can turn to,
well,
like our friendlies.
At that point, yeah, who's really aligned at that point. So you said like the younger generation, 15 to 25, are kind of the game changers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what would your advice be to them? I mean, I know a lot of them, you know, like getting the exemptions, you know, for college and high school, that's, you know, and I don't know. So every state is different there, right?
Every state is different. So in Arizona, so because let's just start with that.
Yeah.
And if for people that are listening outside of Arizona, if you go to nvic.org.
Okay.
So nvic.org.
We'll put all this in the show
is
notes.
A National Vaccine Information Center.
Okay.
And if you go to where I think it says policy and there are vaccine exemptions, it has a map of the United States. And you can click on your map and then it'll take you to the information for your specific state. So in Arizona, a pre-K and daycare child can submit a religious exemption.
Okay.
The moment that child reaches kindergarten through 12 becomes a personal belief exemption.
Okay.
And through the life of the child, there is a medical exemption available, but I don't know of a single person in the last 7 or 8 years that has been able to get a medical exemption. Most doctors
won't
sign
do it,
one.
Yeah.
California was the first state that actually passed a law inhibiting doctors from being able to.
Well, that's the thing. Even if you find one that will do that, they're afraid to lose their
license.
They've
retired now.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
ones we had that
they're done.
Understood what, you know, a child who gets asthma and allergies, it doesn't even have to be, you know, neurological dysfunctions and or issues.
Just an autoimmune.
Just right.
Yeah.
Respiratory, you know, conditions. Ought to probably not get exposed to many
anymore.
Things.
Yes.
So why would we inject them then?
Right.
Right.
So
that's just the most acute impact to the system.
That's the part that I think is sad, is that you've got doctors who did know and have, and they've just been completely bullied out of to not to use their voices you know, well, when they do know better.
So then we go back to that conversation. So the general societal mindset will regard a doctor as being the expert, but is he? Or is he in or she? We have right now proof, it's, you know, that the insurance companies are the ones that kind of dictate what the practitioner requirements are for their practice insofar as adherence to the vaccine schedule.
Right.
So now you have this strong arming that's coming from, you know, another entity that has no relationship with the family. It's not a familial, you know. Even though they might look at records, they don't.
I can't imagine
there's anybody at Kaiser Permanente looking at records from.
Even if they did, it would be just strictly sterile. It wouldn't have any kind of a,
So there's that, right? So I think doctors have also been disempowered. I mean, there might be the conditioned ones that have, you know, kind of fallen into this paradigm, all vaccines are safe, all vaccines are effective. And have a complete buy-in to that philosophy, every vaccine, every child, every time, doesn't matter. It's safe and effective.
Right.
And there might be some that go, well, like, you know, what was the name of the doctor, the pediatric neurosurgeon that ran for president, Dr.
Shiva?
No. He's
oh, it starts with a B.
With a B.
Yeah.
I want to say Benson or something.
Yeah.
It starts with a B.
Yeah.
But anyway, he... You know, when the big debate
Carson,
is going,
Ben Carson.
Ben Carson, that's it. Yeah. He, you know, says maybe there are too many too soon. And that became a hashtag, too many too soon. Well, that's blasphemy.
Yeah.
Right. So that even that he's not saying any of them are bad. Just maybe there's too many.
Maybe
too
just
soon.
Wait.
So back to the exemptions in Arizona. It's a form that you submit. The form is the same for religious and personal, except the title is different.
Right.
The handicap to having a personal belief exemption is that they're considered superfluous, and there are organizations that have targeted the personal belief exemptions to remove them because, you know, it's a nilly-willy choice.
Right.
Even though the premise of having a personal belief exemption instead of a religious exemption was to include atheists. Not, you know.
It includes everybody at that
point. It includes,
Yeah.
So it was, you know, it was a broadened way of doing it. But now if you, like, one of the pieces in legislation that I introduced in 2019 was to have the religious exemption continue on through, you know, K through 12.
Right.
That doesn't add an exemption.
No.
That just, you know, separates the people. Your religious convictions don't conclude when the child starts kindergarten.
Exactly.
All of a sudden, I, you know.
I changed.
My religion doesn't matter anymore.
Right.
Now it's totally personal.
Yeah.
So that form, the content of each one of the places that you would initial states something to the effect, I know that by not vaccinating my child, I'm putting him in harm's way, including, you know, this condition, that condition, and death. And so, in my opinion, I wouldn't be, I never felt comfortable initialing something like that and or signing it because it's not a statement I agree with.
Exactly.
And you can't make me sign something that I'm not in
agree
with.
Exactly.
So if you want, and just to kind of get a little bit in the weeds here, the statute in Arizona says for the exemption states a parent will submit a written statement. So to me, submitting a written statement means I write my own letter.
Right.
I say what I want to say because that's my written statement.
Exactly.
So I've been in combat and challenge with Department of Health Services and different legislators and trying to get that. And part of the reason why I push back is if the statement were, I know that by, scratch off the word not, vaccinating my child, they could get this condition, that condition,
exactly.
and even death. That's a valid statement that I can sign. And so
that's
what I do. I scratch off the not. I mean, my kids are no longer in school, but when they were in school, I submitted a letter and I submitted the form.
Yeah.
And so Arizona has had, in 2019, the same year that I introduced legislation that was proactively seeking informed consent.
Right.
There was another legislator who presented to remove the personal belief exemption. And fortunately, the two chairs that we had at that time in the health committees wouldn't allow it to be, and it wasn't even assigned to the committees, but they wouldn't have done it. But, you know, it's a precarious thing.
Yes.
You know, the Connecticut lost their religious exemption. New Jersey fought back and was able to withstand, you know, the tyranny that was coming. But New York lost their religious exemption. So you have all of these medical refugees, you know, moving about the country, going to some place that is more liberty conscious and understands that it is a parent's right to determine this decision on their medical, you know, pathway. So it is something that I think merits people being involved.
Yes, I agree.
And asserting their rights to, and it doesn't matter if if you vaccinated through age 8 and then decide I don't want to
change my mind.
I don't want to do these 3. I don't want to do these 5. We have been able to pass legislation in Arizona that inhibits. Let me just kind of pause for a second. The exemption is for the vaccines that the Department of Health Services determines are required for school.
Okay.
The legislature enacted two different occasions, laws that prohibit the Department of Health Services from including HPV vaccine and from including the COVID-19 vaccine. So that's a huge win.
That's a big win.
So the Department
of Health... They're no longer the HPV part. So repeat that again.
So the Department of Health Services, when they go through, all agencies have an opportunity to create their codes, their administrative code, and the Department of Health Services are, you know, entitled to determine which vaccines at which age Arizonan children are going to have to have or be exempted from.
Okay.
And the legislature, in two different legislative sessions, passed the Department of Health Services could never include the HPV vaccine.
So good.
And in the last, but the last cycle with Ducey, passed no COVID-19 vaccine would ever be put on the schedule either.
Good.
Which, those are huge wins.
Those are huge wins.
Because...
Yeah.
I mean, the Department of Health Services can just add... And it doesn't... The Department of Health Services here in Arizona doesn't have all of the shots that are part of the schedule.
Right.
But it has plenty of shots that it still allots.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And interestingly enough, one of the other things that I expose to the legislature, you know, when I do these presentations, in that administrative code, it also outlines the procedural steps that somebody who's administering a vaccine needs to take.
Okay.
Right? And so it goes 1, A, B, C, 2, A, B, C, D, E, right? So all of these kind of, and it's laid out, and it's just like you wrote a Word doc and you're putting the steps as it's going to be taken. And the way that it's, if somebody were to follow those steps as outlined, they would not be given the information that there could be a serious adverse event, which is called an SAE, until after they've signed saying they've received information letting them know about the risks and benefits. To me, that is so ghastly. It's so just absolutely perverse. And the reason that is because the CDC puts out the vaccine information sheets, right? So that's what's handed to you. It's a sheet, you know, kind of very, very whitewashed.
Very blasé.
Yeah. And it says, yes, you could have an adverse, you could have a, not an adverse event. That's not what they call it. The side effect. And it could be that you have an allergic this and that, and you may need to go to the hospital, make sure to call, and you could report it to VAERS. It's very kind of, you know, nonchalant at the bottom.
Well, it's desensitized, too, because we're like, what, there's only two countries that can advertise pharmaceuticals even on TV, us and New Zealand.
Yep.
And so then you're sitting there on TV, and if you watch TV a lot, you're desensitized to all the things at the end, and you literally just go sign. It's like, you know, it's such a it's so desensitized to what could actually
happen. So New Zealand, as a matter of fact, has control measures in place for that. So it can only be within certain hours of the day.
Oh,
it's
wow.
not like, you know, you watch the morning shows. It's all...
They're all sponsored by Pfizer anyway.
I don't watch regular TV, but, you know, when you go someplace and they have the TV on, you know...
It's all sponsored by Pfizer.
Yeah, it's just, it's everywhere, like at all times. Where New Zealand, at the very least, it's only when
time
adults are
it.
Watching. Right,
yeah.
So this procedural steps, they present the risks and benefits, which is the vaccine information sheet.
Right.
But then, you know, after the parent signs, yes, I've received this information, then they give them information on a serious adverse event and, you know, to make sure they call the hospital, blah, 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 and, you know, seek medical attention. I find that to be willfully...
deceitful.
Willful malfeasance, right? So I should know about all...
everything.
And so that was part... that was another piece of legislation I drafted was, you know, the informed consent piece.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel that genuine disclosure is what you get when you go have surgery.
Yeah.
It's what you get when you have tooth... you know, you go to the dentist and you have teeth... you know,
every procedure
or whatever.
Every
kind of environment.
Yes.
Where they're going to, you know, put something into your body or you're going to ingest it.
Or you're going to go under anesthesia. Every single thing.
There's a very thorough
explanation. I think you're more informed with elective surgery than you are in something like this, which, again, I go back to, I just believe that it's by design.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of money. I think there's a lot of, there's, like we said, problem, reaction, solution. There's a lot of money in the whole trail of it, you know. And I think that, I think that when you are fully informed, it's like give me a list of the ingredients, let me know what I'm actually injecting in my child. They can't even do that.
So interesting. That's another piece that I don't know if I've shared it with you before, but the excipient list. So all things related to vaccines from the CDC. Are contained within what's called the pink book.
Okay.
And I can give you the link for that
too.
And so the pink book has in there the excipient list, and that's really just the recipes. It's all the ingredients that are in every vaccine.
Okay. Do they actually have it for the COVID yet? I heard they didn't.
The COVID hasn't been this one hasn't been updated, I want to say, since 2021.
Okay.
And COVID, the vaccine wasn't out to market yet.
It'll probably be updated like 2041.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you look at this excipient list, it's just, you know, on the one side is the vaccine, on the right side is, you know, the ingredients that are contained. It's just white paper with black lettering. You don't really know what you're reading. And some things might stand out, like sodium, you know, or some kind of inane thing. But I decided that I was going to color reference this. Have I sent you that?
You did.
So anything that's highlighted in pink is derived from humans, included aborted fetal cell lines.
Yes.
And albumin and, you know, a few other things.
Yeah, you've got pink, yellow.
Pink, orange is derived from animals. Yellow is considered toxic to humans, and there's more yellow than anything.
There is.
And blue is antibiotics, and green is could elicit an allergic response.
Okay.
So now when you look at it and you have an understanding of this legend, what stands out is much more impressive, right? So and when you look into, I had links to some of these ingredients, you know, like it's what's the main ingredient in Raid, antifreeze, you know, formaldehyde, for heaven's sakes. I mean, I don't want formaldehyde in any way,
arsenic,
shape, or form.
All of it, yeah. I mean, that's where I think it really was. That's what really did it for me way back in the day, you know, was the fact that when I looked up the first 10 ingredients, which as we know, and I don't know if this, you can correct me if I'm wrong, even with an ingredient list, I know food is whatever the first ones are the most prominent. So is that the same for vaccines?
I don't know that I know that I could answer that, honestly.
And that was my whole thing because there were so many heavy metals in there.
Yeah.
You know, and so there was all those things I think that, you know, that what you just talked about, when I looked at that, I was just like, this, first of all, it's beautiful that you did that.
Yeah.
I mean, because it just really makes you realize exactly what you're doing. It's not something where, like you said, just black letters on a white paper.
Well, and I think ultimately I want people to be involved mm-hmm. with the, you know, it's what we do as coaches, right? I want people to be involved yes. with what it is they're acquiring as game. New knowledge.
Yes.
Right? Not just have me say, well, these ingredients are bad. Like, here's this, look it through.
Yes.
And do your own inquiry, you know. Check these things that are in yellow. What do you find when you, you know, yeah. do the kind of legwork into that? And there's a, in that ingredient list, to me, what was stunning was that we have, I was a vegetarian when I first got exposed to this.
Mm-hmm.
And the thought that we had monkey kidney cells
yes.
and dog kidney cells and, you know, bovine calf heart serum, mm-hmm. you know, and when you see some of these images of yeah. How they're acquiring this stuff, it's like Frankenstein medicine.
It is. It's very barbaric to me.
And I'll go back to the point. If somebody wants to take these products because they're willing to take that risk, once you've shared with them what that mm-hmm. risk is and other details about it as well, then, you know, I mean, I think... I agree with Dr. McCullough. There should be a complete moratorium on these vaccines.
Yeah.
You know, and here's a few of the questions I've asked. So show me, because the pushback is
always... This is a great way to wrap up, Irene. Tell me what those questions are, because I think that's a big thing.
Yeah.
I really do.
Well, no, it's these questions to the pushback.
Right,
So... The pushback is often, well, you're not an expert. You're not, you know, you don't have the skill set. Are you a virologist or whatever the title
no, I
might
can read.
Be? Right? And so I say, right, exactly. I can read. Would you be willing to provide for me the studies that you have read
okay.
that indicate where the use of all of these ingredients injected within, you know, the one visit at 6 months is safe?
Okay. That's a good
right?
one.
So... I want to learn. Maybe I'm just looking at ingredients. Maybe that's the wrong way to go about
Educate
it.
Educate me.
If you can provide for me the analysis that you have done that validates that these are safe,
mm-hmm.
when administered the way the schedule sets it up, then please share it with me.
Yeah,
right?
Great one.
I mean, I'm opening the door. Do it.
Yeah.
Right? The other is the studies that have indicated that giving a DTaP, an MMR, a polio vaccine, a meningococcal, and what is the other one that's given simultaneously? You know, these five shots given.
Yeah.
When was that studied?
Yeah.
Show it to me, because part of the apprehension for parents is it's too many at once.
Absolutely.
Too many, you know, all together.
Well, even the condition of the child. Are you bringing them in because they've had? Which was our case, they had, you know, they were coughing and had a fever, and are you bringing them in? And then they're like, oh, well, we can catch them up on vaccines. It's no
yeah.
big deal. There was, I mean, show me that, you know,
right.
to where you've actually, that's like a perfect storm.
The catch-up schedule is even
it's
more
horrible.
Frightening.
It's horrible.
There's very short window to accomplish that.
Mm-hmm.
I've known of a couple of stories that have mm-hmm. just been terrible.
They have been terrible.
So to me... I don't feel that I'm combative. I'm more, you know, really willing to be sensible.
Mm-hmm.
If you're willing to have a conversation with me and letting me show you what I've come up with
right.
that
right.
makes me question the entire paradigm, and you have something that validates what you're defending,
right.
that is beneficial to people and not just selling a product, I'm willing to listen.
I've done that and with my daughter, and I was asked to leave the office.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they basically just said, you can, you know, you need to leave.
Yeah.
You know, which goes back to the question, why people feel the way that they feel.
Mm-hmm.
They do. So we are going to put together all of this information on the links and everything like that, that you want to provide for everybody. And then is there one little nugget of information that you can leave anyone with about when they're faced with this situation? You know, whether it's like going into school and being basically barraged with all this, or going into a workplace, or going into anything that you can give them sort of a little armor.
I think ultimately the conviction for, you know, the self-autonomy
yeah.
is you can't teach that. You just have to have the conviction for it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, this isn't a conversation that I want to have in the children's school office. I've determined that this is what I'm submitting. This is their exemption form. If you have a problem with that, you can take it up with your legislator because mm-hmm. this is entitled by law.
Yeah, good.
Right?
I mean, it's good.
And I think for college students in Arizona, and I know other universities do the same thing, there are very few vaccines that are required for college mm-hmm. for that level of education. And I don't know of any university that doesn't have a waiver or an exemption available for what they, you know,
okay,
are asking. So they may push back a little bit if they're going to be on dorms.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't had anybody say that it wasn't accepted in the end. And I've been doing this for a few years here in Arizona. So it's in the state language, it's called for the state right to refuse, it's called an exemption.
Okay.
At the university college level, it's more often than not called a waiver.
A waiver, okay.
So
all right.
I just, you know, just stick to your guns.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I mean, we're tough cookies. We're not willing to do that.
We'll come help you.
Yeah, I've done that too.
I have too. I've gone to bat with people. Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate
Absolutely.
It so much. As always, it's such a wealth of information, and I'm excited to release this too because I think that people are dealing with this more because I think now that they know that they actually can,
mm-hmm.
you know, and not just accept this and go. So okay, guys, all the information will be in here. I'll get this from Irene with the links and also whatever she can share on codes or information or graphs or whatever. And you guys know you can always contact us also on our website at TracyLMartin.com with any information or resources we can get directly to you. So thank you guys so much. Thank you for listening to this episode of the TLM Nation podcast. I hope you've learned something new and useful. I hope you're willing to ask questions and to seek truth and be bold in that. Please subscribe, drop us 5 stars and a great review, and we'll see you next time.